Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com and the author of the Prayer Prescription Series. Hang on here. Okay. The Prayer Prescription Series is the sponsor of this show. Please go to katelovingschenck.com to receive a book I wrote about the Self-Healing Manifesto. My guest this evening is Dave Style of Healthcare for All PA. He is actually the president of Healthcare for All PA. He has some exciting news to share with us pertaining to bringing single-payer healthcare to Pennsylvania. Once it is implemented here, every state in the country will want it. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Hello, Dave Style. How are you?
Good evening, Kate, and thanks for having me to join you tonight.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. You were here a few years ago, and maybe a year and a half ago or so, and we were referring to single payer on that show as central payer. And people are so confused by what this is. And most importantly, we will be discussing the fact that we have, and what you talked about on that show was that we were in the process on that show of getting an economic impact study to show how cost-effective single-payer or central-payer is. And so give us some background about what single-payer is and why is this so important for not only Pennsylvania but the whole country.
Sure, and I think that's the key place to start here is that and people refer to this by different terms, single-payer, one-payer, central-payer, Medicare for all. What we're proposing is under the terminology of the Pennsylvania Healthcare Plan, and that plan is a single-payer, one-payer plan. Essentially, it is a state of Pennsylvania managed and directed healthcare plan providing comprehensive healthcare to every citizen of Pennsylvania. And so it is very different from anything that's out there now, and we look at it as being the next step to the Federal Affordable Care Act, which went into effect several years ago and is really coming into full force in 2014, when all people will be required to buy insurance of one kind or another, healthcare insurance. So what we're proposing now is to go beyond that, to take the next step, and that is to work toward a state-managed plan, because we think probably folks here in the state of Pennsylvania are best capable of directing health care for the people who live here. And as you indicated, when we talked a few years ago about this, we had a pretty good idea and we had a lot of anecdotal information about why this was a better way to go and why single-payer, one-payer plans could provide significant savings while still providing comprehensive health care coverage. Now we have the proof of it. We have just completed, at our cost, we raised the money to do this, we've completed an economic impact study. We'll call it the EIS here tonight. That simply has taken the numbers that we all projected and has developed the numbers bit with an economist from Massachusetts, a healthcare economist from Massachusetts, Dr. Gerald Friedman, and two economists from here in Pennsylvania, one from F&M and the other from Penn State, who have worked with us on developing this plan. So what we now have is the documentary and the data to support the fact that what we're proposing provides more health care to everyone at a much lower cost than we have than we are currently paying.
Right. And the thing is that the another difference between single payer and the Affordable Care Act is that the Affordable Care Act is still hanging out with the corporate sponsored insurance companies. Those of us who were watching this happen in the country when Obama, our President Obama, was putting forth the Affordable Care Act, it was not only disappointing, but it was horrifying to see that he was continuing along the same road with the insurance companies, which unfortunately, I don't want to be a naysayer. I don't want to sound negative about the Affordable Care Act. But as a nurse in this country, and we see how access to care has been severely threatened with because of the insurance company. And if you're not going to get the insurance companies out of the equation, we are not going to see anything different. In fact, I think we're going to see a worsening problem because of the health insurance that people have to have will just continue to having people be underserved in this country with their health care. What do you think of that?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and that's what we're looking at here. We have to acknowledge that an insurance company providing health care has a difficult position because many of them are for-profit and some are non-profit, but either way, their job is to provide insurance. And insuring people, they incur cost. Their motives, their direction, their corporate motivation has to be to control those costs. So in effect, we are placing an insurance company between the client or the patient, that is us, and their doc and our doctors. It is the insurance company which is between us and ultimately is the decider of the type and the manner and the extent of health care that we will receive. And we take and we add to that the fact that providing insurance is an enormously expensive proposition. In fact, right. In Pennsylvania, something like 15-17% of every health care dollar is spent for administration, the administration of the insurance plan. Those are dollars that do not go toward health care. They do not do anything to improve the health care of our citizens. And so that's one of the things the study has clearly shown, is that we can reduce costs by reducing that administrative cost in addition to other things.
And then, of course, the health insurance companies also have to pay their CEOs, and they have to answer to Wall Street. Single payer will not have to do those things. Am I correct?
That is correct, because a single payer, a plan administered by the state of Pennsylvania, and I know that some of your listeners will be very concerned about what this means in terms of big government, socialized medicine, all of those sorts of things, but it really is no different than the educational system that we have today. The state of Pennsylvania provides education to all of our citizens, and it's really no different than the healthcare system is no different than that. It is a model that is used by almost all of the major developed nations in the world except for our country.
Well, another thing I see that has happened in this country with the healthcare system and many other entities is that there is a lack of regulation. I would hope that this system will have some very stiff regulatory oversight. Is that something that is going to be planned?
Yeah, that's part of the legislation which has been was introduced in the last session, and this is early in this session yet, but it's being prepared to be introduced in the Senate in a few weeks by Senator Jim Furlow from the Pittsburgh area. But the regulations establish clearly the responsibility for and what health care will have to provide for in this country. And that's an important thing, because the one thing that I think most people would concede about the Affordable Care Act, the Federal Affordable Care Act, is that it really didn't do anything to address the cost of healthcare. And that's very different from where we're doing. We are addressing the cost by regulation, partly by identifying the types of healthcare, what we will provide, providing for a different standard in terms of where healthcare comes from. So for employers, there's a big change in their costs related to the cost of doing business, from workers' comp coverage to liability coverage. All of those sorts of things are directly impacted by the reduction in cost of healthcare under this plan.
Well, of course, there are many employers, just as a side note, who don't insure their employees at all. So they're going to have to get involved in this.
Yeah, that's the one, in talking to chambers of commerce and other business groups, I've always said, and I am a business owner, so I have seen both the good side and the bad side, but the one thing I do know is that I feel that it is that if business is going to be the principal provider of health care, as is now required under the Affordable Care Act, that it's not sustainable. That business should concentrate on the products and the services that they do, and not on providing of health care. That's not the job of business. And that's one of the major reasons why I'm involved in this in the first place, is to do it. So the benefit to businesses is that there's significant costs, reductions. But as you said, if a company is not providing health care at all at this time, if this were passed in Pennsylvania, they would have additional costs. There's no sense in trying to hide that. There are additional costs, but they also will see reductions in costs in many of the other types of insurance and activities. One, their unemployment insurance coverage goes down. Their comprehensive insurance goes down. Liability insurance goes down. Workers' comp insurance goes down, because all of those insurances have medical coverage as a major component of the insurance. If that component is now covered under another program, the cost of those insurances decline. So there's benefit all around.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, then, that would stand to reason as well that individuals such as ourselves would have a decrease in cost to our own car insurance and homeowners insurance.
Yes. The fact is, this is probably a good time to bring in, because I'm sure your listeners are very interested to know, how is this going to be paid for? Because no matter how we do it, it's expensive. Under our plan, employers would pay a 10% of their payroll cost for the plan, and individuals would pay 3% of their income for the plan. And that would be assessed by the state of Pennsylvania. In effect, it's a tax that would be paid in order for health care. However, in almost all businesses, they are now spending well in excess of 10% of the payroll to provide health care to their employees, if, of course, they provide it. And for most individuals, if they have health care at all, even if their employer is supplying it, chances are that there are deductibles and copays that have to be covered. If you're retired, you're paying for plan Part B of Medicare coverage. Maybe even for something for Part D Medicare coverage, you're paying for supplemental coverage. Chances are for many people, for most middle-income people, 3% tax to pay for health care, comprehensive health care, is less than you're paying now. And that's the big advantage to both businesses and individuals.
Well, my husband and I recently had to start paying for our own health insurance, and I can almost guarantee that we're not paying just 3% of what we're making on this deal. And it's been a complete and total shock to witness what people have to pay for health insurance, and the fact that anybody would accept this is even just as offensive as having to, you know, accept it, or pay for it, or go for it, or whatever. It's just very, very annoying.
It's very costly, so, and it's especially for retired folks, it's very costly.
So the welfare system, as we used to know it, was called an entitlement. Now, this program, I want to make clear, our single-payer program here in Pennsylvania is not an entitlement. Could you make that? Could you describe that distinction?
The welfare program we call it an entitlement in the sense that if you are at a certain income level, a certain lower income level, then you are entitled to certain benefits. Might be food stamps, it might be cash, allowances, those sorts of things. This is not an entitlement program. The only thing that you have to be in order to receive health care in Pennsylvania, should this plan pass, is to be a citizen of the state. And the difference is that everyone, and I do mean everyone, pays something for the plan. No one is free. When we say it's 3% of your income, that includes all kinds of income. It includes cash benefits from welfare. It includes workers' compensation coverage. It includes unemployment compensation. It includes interest and dividends, pensions, Social Security. Any money that you receive from any source is subject to the 3% tax. So no one who receives benefit gets it entirely free. Everyone contributes something to the plan.
That is so cool. Now, another thing I found out when I came to the board meeting of Healthcare for All PA recently was that if we would go anywhere in the country and get sick, this plan would pay for it.
That is correct. This plan is for all Pennsylvania citizens, and it is the plan that provides health care protection to you no matter where you go. Different than folks who might come into Pennsylvania, we get this question often. Well, what about students who don't live here? They just come here to go to school. The requirement for eligibility under Pennsylvania health care plan is that you must file a tax return in Pennsylvania. Even if you don't owe any taxes, you must file a return. Filing that return is what qualifies you to receive medical benefits in this state. And so you are then covered. Now, some people also ask the question about, well, I live in Florida for 6 months a year. The question is, where is your principal residence? If you are registered, your vehicles are registered in Pennsylvania, you vote in Pennsylvania, you have a fixed address in Pennsylvania, and you file a tax return in Pennsylvania, you will receive the health care coverage. If you do not do those things, then you will not be eligible.
Wow, that's so cool. So I think our listeners might want to know how the economic impact study was done. How was it conducted?
Very good question. First of all, as I said, there were three economists that were involved. When we began and we gave direction to these economists as to what we wanted to accomplish in the healthcare study, our key point was to demonstrate that the legislation which was introduced in the last session and will be introduced here again in a few weeks. And by the way, that's SB Senate Bill 400, and in the House, it was House Bill 2551 in the last session. So if people want to go to the state website and look for those bills, they can do so. We wanted to demonstrate very clearly that the revenue that was raised by those bills, and that's the 3% and 10%, and the expenditures that would be made to provide health care to all of the citizens of Pennsylvania made for a viable plan. We would generate sufficient revenue to pay for those health care services. That was the very simple directive to Dr. Friedman and the other two professors who put this study together. So what they had to do was to look at the components of both revenue and expenditures. And in revenue, of course, it's looking at all of the forms of income that people receive in the state of Pennsylvania, which I listed a number of them just a little bit ago.
Mm-hmm.
They had to determine if they took all of those and took 3% of that, how much would that generate? They came up with a dollar mm-hmm. number. Then they mm-hmm. looked at all of the employers in the state of Pennsylvania, and because employers collect and pay the 3.07% income tax now for all of their employees, it's pretty simple for us to know what the it is public information. We know what the payrolls are for all the businesses in the state of Pennsylvania. So we could, mm-hmm. we could look that up, we could calculate it and take 10% of that number, and that would be the revenue. Now, there's some obviously some things that we had to do to get all that information, but in general, that's how it generated the revenue numbers. Then mm-hmm. the other side of it is a little bit more difficult. How much are we spending in Pennsylvania already for health care? And we can look at what every hospital is charging for health care. We can look at what doctors are charging for health care. We can look at what the state has paid for through their medical assistance programs that do exist, that is Medicaid primarily. Mm-hmm. They can look at and see what they're spending for that. We can look at Medicare. We can see what was being spent for that. We can look at VA records and see what was being spent. So ultimately, you have to look at all of those sources of healthcare cost and begin to add all those up, and then you have to compare the two when you get done. And in Pennsylvania, it was pretty clear that we were spending somewhere on the order of $144 billion a year of healthcare costs. That's what mm-hmm. we are currently spending in Pennsylvania. When we added up everything that we would spend under this plan after taking the savings under administrative costs and all of the others, we would spend $128 billion. So we knew that we would be able to generate significant savings. We also knew that with the 10% and the 10% and the 3%, that we would mm-hmm. be able to generate significant surpluses in the plan that would save not only the money, but we would be generating sufficient revenue to pay for that $128 billion. As a matter of fact, we would have a surplus of several billion dollars over that. And some say, well, why don't you just lower the 3% and 10% then? Well, we have to make sure that we protect against future cost increases. We have to make sure that that in some years, if there's a bad economy, we might not collect as much as we collected in other years. So we have to protect against that. But the bottom line is that at 3% and 10%, we generate sufficient revenue to pay for the health care costs of every citizen and still save some $16 billion a year in health care spending.
That is very, very impressive. It really is. So
yeah,
it was actually
surprising mm-hmm. to some of us who've been deeply involved in this, because we were concerned when we started this that at the 3% and 10% level we would not generate sufficient revenues, but it became clear that we did, and that was very gratifying. We also were concerned that maybe we couldn't provide all of the comprehensive health care services that we would like to provide, mm-hmm. which includes vision and dental under this plan. We're also concerned about long-term care coverage for older folks, which is expensive. I mean, we have to consider that. How much does that cost? But when we got all done, we found that we would be able to afford those things at the 3%, 10% level.
It's just, I mean, it's not that this is the first economic impact study that's ever been done for a state. And so you knew that based on some of the other economic impact studies that were done, that you had a pretty good chance of seeing these kinds of figures, I would think.
Yes, and that's a very good point, because in fact this type of program is active, and whether we call it single payer, one payer, whatever, that type of program is active in some 26 states who are actively working to enhance the same general type of program that we are. Now, our program is written a little differently; it's a bit more extensive, but this is a movement that isn't just here. It's movement throughout the country. Because no matter what we think about the Affordable Care Act, it is law, but it is still going to leave a lot of people uninsured, and not just uninsured, but underinsured. They won't be protected against all of the calamities of life that, that might generate from their health care situations. And so other states are working on it. We're working on it. And we did have, we now have the ability to compare how we came out and what our plan is compared to the plans in other states. And we think our plan compares very favorably. Our plan is certainly much more specific than other states. It is more developed in terms of the economics and in terms of the legislation than some other states. But there are reasons why they do things the way they did. That's why, again, I repeat, we believe that health care should be administered at the state level rather than at the federal level ultimately.
Yes, and does the does the Affordable Care Act allow for states to go single payer?
Well, that's interesting. That's a very good question. And the fact is, no, it doesn't. Not at this time. The Affordable Care Act has a provision that would only allow states to innovate health care coverages or protections in 2017. So, in other words, we can't do this right now, even if we could get it passed. And we still have a lot of groundwork to do anyway. But 2017 is the year that that states are allowed to innovate, provided that a health care plan that they put in place is equal to or better than the Federal Affordable Care Act. So we've got a lot of work to do between now and 2017. Now, should we be fortunate and be able to pass this in this legislative session or even the next session, the next two-year session, we could apply to the federal government for a waiver of the Affordable Care Act. My guess is that if we could demonstrate a more comprehensive and complete plan than the Affordable Care Act, that probably we would get that waiver, but there's no assurance.
Well, I guess I have this feeling, and I'm not that the feds and the president want to prove the effectiveness of the Affordable Care Act. So, in other words, we can't really, in good faith, say that the Affordable Care Act is less than what we have to offer until it's proven. And unfortunately, the way to prove it is that people will face calamity, they'll face devastation because of health care problems that arise and they can't pay for them. And then they go in. I mean, the same kind of thing happens with the Affordable Care Act that has been going on forever, which is, if you can't pay for your medical costs, you will have to, lose your house or go into extreme debt.
Yes. And even the proponents of the Affordable Care Act recognize that there will still be some 20 million uninsured people under that act. So because of that, we can provide something under this that they can't. And you're right that we won't really know how effective the Affordable Care Act is until it gets started next year in 2014. And the full extent of it is probably going to be 2017. And
yes,
then we will know whether or not it really works, how it works, how many people we left behind, how many people are still uninsured, underinsured. Whether the administration of the plan has become too onerous, too costly, we won't know that until that's done. So we think it's best that we have something in place long before that time.
Yes, and so we have it, we're getting it in place, and then we just wait and see. I mean, we can try to pass it in the next administrative session, and I think we should be very positive about passing it. But today is the day that this economic impact study has been announced to the general public. I want to make that clear. And I want to know how much excitement has been generated because of it today.
Well, among our people, to begin, first of all, I have to say that our team is just a wonderful team. The people from across the state, in every county and in every major municipality, we have people who are just passionate about this, and they have worked very hard. And there haven't been a lot of rewards, to be honest with you, in the last few years, but today was a big day for all of them because they could, for the first time, say to their friends, to their neighbors, to the media in their areas, to the press, and to other organizations, both business and social and religious, that we now have the documentation to support this Pennsylvania healthcare plan. And for them, that was really gratifying because they really had something to hold on to. They really had something to talk about. It was no longer just talking about, well, we think this will be the case. The evidence is, or that the it looks to be that we'll be able to save money. Now we've got the proof.
Yes.
And that is really exciting to people. So all across the state today, our people were doing press releases, doing mm-hmm. press conferences, publishing this to other groups and letting people know that that we are prepared now to present a concrete plan that is supported by hard data. Very exciting to people.
Oh, my gosh, what a great day.
Yes.
And then, of course, this radio show is part of that.
It is part of that, and we hope we can do more of these kinds of shows because, bluntly, it's hard to reach the folks in this state. It's a big state, a lot of mileage, and so radio coverage is just exceedingly important to us. We can reach so many people with a single show and actually get them actively involved because it's an interactive kind of thing. We're gonna keep repeating, but we will never pass this legislation if we just depend on legislators to do it. I was a legislator for 16 years. I know what it takes to. It's very hard work, and legislators need to know that the people are behind them when we come to these things.
That's very true.
And if they don't have the people behind them, they have many other things to work on, many other very complex issues to work on. So it's up to us, the people of Pennsylvania, to ensure that our legislators know the value of this plan and to really get behind it. And then we'll see activity.
Yeah, we do need to get the people of Pennsylvania interested. I wonder if we should do a door-to-door campaign.
We certainly should do door-to-door. We need to do every kind of outreach that we can. It should be door-to-door. It is speaking to groups. I mean, I've traveled across the state, as have many of other people, talking to groups. We need to do cable television so that we could actually get cable TV ads. We need to do radio ads, all of which takes money, of course, and that's something we don't have right now. So
an idea. Do we have a YouTube channel?
We do have. To be honest with you, we don't have a specific YouTube channel that at this point. We have some people, some members of our group, who have YouTube videos posted of one kind or another about certain aspects of this plan. But the organization itself does not, at this moment, have a YouTube channel.
We need one.
Yep, you're right, and that's a very good outreach
program.
Very good idea. That is something that we need to develop.
So how about the website? Is that something that is in transition right now?
Yeah, there's two things changing with the website. First of all, today the website was updated to show the introduction of the economic impact study and to provide highlights from that study. So that the webpage was updated. A lot of that's on the first page and some of the other pages. But we did coordinate the revision of the site to reflect the what just came out today. But beyond that, we are totally revising the website. We have a group of students from the University of the Arts in Philadelphia who are actively involved in changing the website. I don't even want to use the word changing. It's really entirely redesigning the website to make
mm-hmm.
it more visual, more graphic. During our meeting here a couple weeks ago, they showed us some new suggestions for a logo. I think we're going to change the logo, change the colors, make the website more readable, give it more content, make it easier for people to navigate. And that will probably be by around midsummer or so before all of that happens. So those are the
mm-hmm,
two things
mm-hmm.
happening with the website.
Well, the website that is now in existence right at this moment is healthcareforallpa.org. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. And
that's
it's for the number four.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number
so
four.
So it's healthcare4allpa.org.
Another thing that people get confused about is that this is somehow a Democratic versus a Republican Party issue. And in reality, it affects all of us. It has nothing to do. It's totally bipartisan.
It is totally bipartisan, and actually we even like to use the term nonpartisan. I don't know of any party that doesn't get sick. So if there's some people that never get sick, well, then they can belong to that party. But everybody gets sick at some point or another. Everyone is going to need health care at some point throughout their lives. And it is absolutely nonpartisan, and we want to emphasize that. We have both Republicans and Democrats, and I was a Republican legislator for 16 years. So, and I believe in this plan and because I am a fiscal conservative. And bluntly, this plan costs less. If we can provide health care for people at a significantly lower cost than we're currently paying, why wouldn't we do that? And then further, as a business owner, when I say I can turn over my responsibilities for providing health care and pay the tax on it, and I can be out of health care, I can concentrate on selling my products instead of providing health care and working through all that, why wouldn't I do that? And so I think it becomes an easy, and perhaps too easy for some of us to understand, but we have to overcome the natural resistance to these things, because some folks will say, as I said before, it's big government, it's socialized medicine, and I'm not sure how a fiscal conservative say, good, let's not have socialized medicine, let's have free market medicine. Of course, it all costs us more, and it's less effective, and we got a lot of people who are uninsured, but that's okay, as long as it's free market based. I'm for the free market when it costs less, but not when it does.
Well, why, you're saying, why wouldn't we do that? That is a loaded question, Dave, because I, you know, it has to do with the greed of our society, which has always existed. But I believe that this could be the nutcracker, as it were, to get people to really see that corruption and greed and the corporate mentality that has so far ruled has got to go. It's not serving anybody. First of all, every country in the world except for us has, the civilized world except for us, has single payer, has a health care plan that is very similar to what we hope to implement here in Pennsylvania. Therefore, you know, we need to say that there's a lot more economic viability in these countries. And as a matter of fact, America has not been as economically viable because of our healthcare system.
There's a lot of truth in that. In my company, we do sell products overseas. And so when I sell products overseas, I have to sell against competitors who have nationalized healthcare systems. Their cost to provide medical care through the taxes they pay is less than we pay to provide medical coverage to our employees. So first, we as international salespeople, we're at a competitive disadvantage because of that. Very significant. And here again, we get back to, if you're a fiscal conservative, you have got to like the Pennsylvania healthcare plan, because it is less costly than what we're doing now. We spend less money both at a government level and at a personal level and at a business level. And so it's very difficult. As a matter of fact, the three groups that benefit the most by the Pennsylvania healthcare plan are, number one, businesses. A tremendous advantage to businesses, because it lowers our costs of doing business. Secondly, it is very, very effective for all levels of government, whether it's county government, municipal government, state government. All government employees are covered by health care plans now. Very expensive. The savings to municipalities and to counties and to school districts particularly is huge. And mm-hmm. and so that's a second major group that benefits from this. And the third, of course, are seniors. Seniors benefit because their health care costs, their income is fixed, their health care costs keep going up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
They benefit greatly by this plan. So those are the three groups that we're beginning to target. There are many others, but those three are the that will benefit the most.
And who are very engaged in their government and will help us to get this message across. So that's a very good point. I think there are many others, but those are the three that can get the message across to more people.
Yes, and certainly...
And they vote. You know, they vote.
Yes, they do vote. And it covers a lot of the citizens of Pennsylvania. So it's a good cross-representation of all of the citizen groups of Pennsylvania.
So we have a Republican, very, very conservative Republican governor here in Pennsylvania, but we had what would be called a liberal governor before him, and I don't even think he would have passed this bill. What is wrong with these people? How do we get... I would think that our governor, Corbett, would be receptive to this, but he must have a lot of special interests. This is the problem with government, is that they are bought and paid for, almost every one of them, I can't say all of them, and they're paid and bought and paid for by special interests, which would include the health insurance company. Obviously, health insurance companies have a lot to lose in this plan that we have.
There's no question about that, yes.
But I have a question, though. How can we get them to be our, you know, like cooperate with us? What would be in it for them?
Well, the first thing that I would want to say is that insurance companies under the traditional model aren't going to, would certainly fade away because they would not be in the responsibility or have the responsibility of providing medical coverage. However, as with all businesses, times change, products change, people change, and you have to adapt to the marketplace. It doesn't mean that insurance goes away.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that insurance companies could not provide other kinds of health-related insurance. For example, we do not provide for any elective plastic surgery under this.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance companies could offer such protection. They could offer such coverage.
Mm-hmm.
They could offer coverages that would go beyond what a state-administered health care plan might provide. Example, they could provide for private rooms. You
mm-hmm.
could buy an insurance policy that would ensure that you would have a private room in a hospital, if that were the case. They could provide for subsidiary coverage that would occur in the event of a health catastrophe, perhaps such as providing certain amenities while you are hospitalized, providing certain incomes to the family while that happens, providing coverages to perhaps students within a family who might have a difficult time paying for their continued education. So they can change their business model. They can insure plenty of other areas. It doesn't mean they have to go out of business. It means they have to change their model, something that we as business people are doing all the time, because if we didn't, we'd go out of business.
Wow, this is really exciting when you think about it. That's how you can sell it. I mean, I hate to say that, but yeah, I hate that word. But yeah, this is how you could sell it to health insurance companies.
Sure. I mean, we believe that very strongly that there's a role for them to play. It'll be a different role, but there's still a strong role to play.
And another thing, as I understand it, that bringing single payer to the state of Pennsylvania will generate a lot of jobs. Is that proven in the economic impact study? And in what capacity would these jobs be generated?
Yes, the impact study does provide the information that there is a fairly large economic impact It comes from several different things. The study says that the employment would produce something like 200,000 more jobs. And that comes from a number of things. The biggest source of those jobs is to take the we have about somewhere around 12% of Pennsylvanians right now are uninsured. So that means that there's somewhere around very close to 1.5 million people who are not insured, and many of the balance are underinsured. So as those folks would now have coverage, that means they're going to seek medical services that previously have not been available to them. When they seek those medical services, it means that it's going to take a whole new cadre of people to provide the services and the materials that are necessary in order to provide health care to all those folks. It'll take more doctors, more nurses, more hospital technicians, more janitors. It'll take more people who provide the equipment and the compounds and the pharmaceuticals that go to these hospitals and to doctors in order to treat it. So that's the first place. The second thing is that a lot of these jobs will come from ancillary ancillary services which have to be provided. If we're going to provide more health care, then we're going to have more construction because we will probably have to build some additions, maybe even some new hospitals. Doctors may have to expand their offices. So we have construction jobs that are going to be a part of this. And so it's this whole ripple effect that goes through the economy. When you can serve another 1.5 million people who don't have those services now, it creates a huge economic impact.
Wow, that is so exciting. And, you know, it just lays the... Well, another thing that interests me is the responsibility that we all have to maintain our health. We have a sick society. People are not eating well. They're not taking care of themselves. And part of the problem is that the being underserved has created a sicker society than we've ever had. How can we help people to become healthier? Certainly, we have to start with ourselves. We have to become very healthy, mind, body, and spirit kind of health.
Excellent point. And the first thing we'd have to say about that is that some folks are not healthy because they can't afford to be healthy. They aren't doing the things that they need to do because they believe they can't afford it. I happen to believe that there's ways to be healthy that don't have to cost a lot of money. But when you can't see a doctor and can't get advice from people about how to practice better health care, when you don't have anyone who follows up on your care, when you have conditions that go untreated for years and years that cause significant problems, the whole teamwork of providing health care is significant, because people will be more healthy if health does not have a cost component for them, if it's just that 3%. And that's that component is very significant. They will seek health care when it becomes available to them. But secondly, and I think probably more important, and it's this is what I've just hinted at, kind of, when you can seek health care, you will get better advice. You will have someone that is regularly following and tracking and cares about your health care.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're being reimbursed for it. They can provide that coverage to you, and you will get better health care simply because you have someone that is now interested in following your health care needs.
And I always bring up in these discussions, I believe another great way to lower the cost of health care is to bring in the alternative integrative health care services that are available to a select few these days. But a lot of people don't really want allopathic medicine in their lives. And, I think that the doctors of today are becoming much more understand that patients are seeking alternative health care, and they are blending that into their practices, and the doctors that do that are more popular amongst people, so amongst their patients.
Yes,
so
and I
that, yeah, we need to take that into consideration.
Yeah, a very important facet of what we're proposing here is that this program does not propose to have the state tell anybody, any doctor or any patient, about how they will, how their health care will be provided. We intend, and the legislation says, that health care is between a doctor and their patient. Nobody in between. And it is, so we say that while this is a publicly funded plan, it is a privately delivered plan. Each individual in the state of Pennsylvania will choose their doctor, choose their hospital, choose their level of services. That's between them and their medical provider. We're not involved in that. So that is just very significant in terms of, again, making sure that medical coverage is provided by for people by the medical team, and not by any insurance company or any person in the middle deciding who will and who will not get coverage and what that coverage will be.
Yeah, so we have a little bit of a medical Gestapo in this country, and I wonder, you know, what I mean by that is people, government agencies such as the AMA, the pharmaceutical companies, and, of course, the healthcare industry, telling people what they can and can't get. If people don't do opt out of cancer treatment and go strictly alternative routes for their cancer therapies and so forth, that would be embraced, and nobody would cut them out. I mean, there's a whole aura of these medical entities telling people how they must do their health care. And I think what you're saying is that we need to foster, and then this sort of plan fosters that personal relationship that people can have and must have with their health care providers, whether it be doctors, nurse practitioners, midwives, physician assistants, or what have you.
And it's so that you can make your determination of where you will seek health care and who you will seek it from. If you're pregnant and for the birth of the baby, you would like to utilize a midwife, that becomes possible because that's your choice under this. And if you, after the baby is born, if you need an extra day in the hospital, fine. That's between you and your doctor. Those are decisions that you and your doctor should make. One of the questions I'm often asked is, well, what about somebody who's 85 years old and they need a new knee? Are we gonna do that? Not our decision. That's the decision of the patient and the doctor. If the doctor says this person is healthy, they can greatly improve their quality of life by replacing their knee, no reason medically why they shouldn't have it, it'll be done.
Wow.
That might not happen under current insurance company practices. So that's the point, is it's doctors who need to make these medical decisions.
Yes. And there's no reason in the world... I would think this would be very exciting to doctors. I think that would be another target group we need to get this information out to.
Yeah, doctors have been very, and we actually have a number of doctors who are active in our organization, the organization Healthcare for All PA. There is a national group called Physicians, PNHP, which stands for, it's going to come to me, I'll get it. Anyway, PNHP, it's Physicians for a National Healthcare Plan is what it is.
Yes.
They are very active and been very active in promoting within states this concept of single-payer, one-payer healthcare systems. So doctors have been generally supportive. Those who are the most supportive are the family practitioners, I think, of this plan, because To my way of thinking, and others may feel differently, but to my way of thinking, your general practice or family practice doctor should be the gatekeeper to your healthcare needs. That's the one you would see first. That's the one who would recommend additional treatments, additional tests, but and they can coordinate all of your medical care and medical coverages. Those doctors tend to be much more supportive of this than sometimes specialists do, because specialists have a unique niche in the healthcare system, and they may fear the kind of this kind of program because it might inhibit their ability to practice medicine. It might lay restrictions on them in terms of procedures and policies, which we don't intend. But I think there is some fear of that. So, but ultimately, doctors are a key. Doctors and nurses both. Nurses have been very supportive of the single payer healthcare system. So that all of the medical community is very critical to this. But you can see here as I'm talking that this takes a large grassroots effort if we're going to sell this here in Pennsylvania. It means we have to bring together and knit together large and broad constituencies of people that will ultimately see that this is a better way and that they will actively seek out their legislators and demand that it be done.
That's right. I would think doctors would be concerned if there's if all of a sudden everybody is covered. It would seem like people can that doctors really can't turn away people for care, and there's going to be more and more people that they have to care for. But then I think there's going to be a transition period where all of this is going to be a little overwhelming. But if you're going to train more doctors, train more nurses, train more medical people, and that will get people in the swing of caring for people. And I think that that people are afraid of that, that they're afraid of all these people coming for care suddenly who haven't had care, and it's going to be kind of a mess for a while.
Well, I think that is. Certainly the level of service, the utilization of medical services will go up, and there's, I think, every place where it's happened, that is what happens. One of the things that there is some concern about is we may not have enough doctors in the right specialties and in the right places were this to pass immediately. But one of the other things we have to acknowledge is Pennsylvania has great medical schools, and a lot of the doctors who leave those medical schools today upon graduation, they leave the state. If this kind of a program is appealing and provides the kinds of compensation and the types of freedom to practice medicine, we can keep those doctors here. We won't be sending them all someplace else, and that'll help us enhance our medical programs and provide the practitioners that are necessary.
Oh, that's a great point. Okay, so people can go to healthcare number four, all PA, healthcare four, number four, all PA.org, and get the latest updates on this situation. And I believe a YouTube channel is an order for any of the filming and videos that are taking place across the state. We can put it on that channel. And many other ways, just we're going to get the word out. There's no doubt about it. There's a lot
That's
of
right.
ways to get the word out, and it doesn't have to be expensive.
Nope. We're fortunate to live in a time when the social networking, social media that's available is so broad, and it costs so little, so we can certainly use that.
Yes, I'm excited. Well, stay tuned, right? And
yep.
I will talk to you again very
Great.
Soon.
Be happy to update you in a little bit of time. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to be playing Music for Mother and Child by Krause B. Jensen.
Thank you.